My name is Maren Green. I walk the path of a sacred midwife, mother, and spiritual gangster. My role is a keeper of wisdom, of the ancient ways of being. I trust Source as my ultimate guide. There is nothing more radical than feeling and listening to your own soul. On this podcast, you'll hear about my real life as a mother to 10, a sacred birth worker, a priestess, and a creator of the new earth. I see my life purpose in my children, in leading the sovereign and radical birth community of Indie Birth, and in embodied learning and living. Join me in the remembering of who you really are. You are powerful. Welcome to the podcast. I am so excited to have another beautiful, powerful woman on the podcast this week with me. It took some time to arrange this meeting, and I'm so glad that it worked out. Getting to talk with Dr. Alexandra Casitu, author of Back to the Womb, was an absolute joy, both on a personal and professional level. I really hope you come this way, Alex. I can't wait to meet you in Hawaii one day. In the meantime, everybody can enjoy not only this beautiful book that she's written, but this interview, this chat, I believe, among sisters, really. We had so much in common, so many different themes we could have talked about for hours, but so honored to share her and her beautiful work here today. Dr. Alexandra Casitu is a devoted wife, mother, an accomplished writer with a PhD from the University of Hawaii. As a passionate advocate for home birth, she draws inspiration from her own experiences as a mother of two wonderful children. Driven by a desire to deepen human connections, her writing reflects a profound understanding of the human experience. In addition to her role as a writer, Alexandra is an intuitive, bringing a unique perspective to her work. Beyond her literary pursuits, Dr. Casitu is the founder of Infinite Expansions, a company dedicated to personal and collective growth. With a keen interest in fostering a sense of interconnectedness, her writing serves as a catalyst for bringing humanity closer to itself. Outside of her professional endeavors, Alexandra finds joy in sharing life adventures with her husband, Henry. They bond over their love for movies, travel, hiking, and cooking. I hope you enjoy this interview, and I'll see you soon. Welcome, Alexandra. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you, and I feel honored, and I'm so grateful for you and all the work you do. So thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. I would love to have you introduce yourself a little bit more. Gave the listeners just a brief history about you, but more is always welcome, and I'm sure you'll weave in maybe some story about your own births. And ultimately, yeah, I want to hear about how you came to write this book and why it was birthed from you.
Yeah, thank you. It was certainly a labor of love, as you know, as we birth our babies and birth our projects into the world, there's always those moments of anticipation and fear and overcoming. So this was another reminder of that process of birth for me too. And I'm sure you can relate to the many things that you've birthed and many people you've birthed as well. But yeah, definitely. A little bit about me. I grew up in Minnesota and kind of a super adventurous kid. Was always dirty and had dirt under my fingernails and fishing and canoeing and doing all the things outside and staring at the stars and thinking about life a lot, and have always been kind of people used to call me an old soul, I guess, and have always gravitated more towards really spiritual experiences and some of the deeper connections, not just surface level things. So I think that kind of set the stage for my experiences in life and the way I question things And then when I got pregnant with my daughter, I was still in that kind of essence of questioning things, and doing things very naturally. I kind of had gone through times in my life where I was like, you know, I'm going to try this instead of that. So instead of taking the allopathic route, maybe try acupuncture. So I was starting to kind of dip my toes into a whole new realm of how to see and conceptualize health and conceptualize like my experience in the world as a whole person. And I think being pregnant is such an opportunity for that. For so many
definitely women. Yeah, definitely. So you were not raised in a more natural mindset? Were you raised in a more mainstream environment?
I wouldn't say I was raised in a mainstream environment, but it certainly wasn't it wasn't Eastern medicine either. I grew up with a single mom, and we grew up in food shelf lines. And so our environment and our kind of social and economic experience was one of poverty. And so when you're in that experience, you do kind of question systems that you are kind of forced into, right? Or you have to kind of battle with. Mm-hmm. So I think that is part and parcel of it. And then a lot of the elders when I was a kid, we're all hippies too. So they would, you know, talk about plant medicine and talk about how to care for the water and talk about the natural rhythm of things and the star placements and things like that. But my primary caregiver, my mom, was just kind of trying to survive. So it wasn't like, here, take this tincture, child. It was here, I get in the food shelf line and get some cereal before we starve.
Exactly. Yeah. So you were exploring other things, probably just as a curious child.
I think so. Yeah.
What was your exposure to birth? I always love to ask that question just because, you know, everybody's had different experiences, and it's really cool to see how sometimes it shapes us later in life.
Yeah, I had never seen a woman give birth until I gave birth. Okay. So this that is answers. My first experience. And that's almost 10 years ago now. So, nice. So I didn't grow up in, you know, on the farm or grow up watching women give birth at home or anything like that. And I was the only, quote unquote, natural birth of my mother's. I was the only one who was unmedicated, not induced. So I don't know. Sometimes you think like, maybe that is part of my story too, of like my own coming into this world really undisturbed, but in the hospital, but undisturbed. But yeah, when I got pregnant with my daughter, I was seeing midwives through a hospital care system, like hospital midwives. And I had questioned the glucose test because I didn't really want to do it. And I was cleaning up my diet and addressing food allergies and trying to get healthy and kind of recover from the stress of poverty and what that did to my gut health.
Definitely, yeah.
And she screamed at me on the phone and said they were going to drop me as a patient. And I just was like, whoa.
If you didn't do the test.
Yeah, if I didn't do the test.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I feel like I have a similar story with my second. I was seeing midwives at a hospital as well, funny enough, before we last minute switched to a home birth. But actually, for me, that was like the point of contention. I think that's what made me eventually have a home birth, that good old glucose test.
Yeah. Sticky corn syrup test.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, and then I was just like, you know, if she's going to treat me like this, how is she going to treat me if I go to a hospital? I'm not ready for that. So I called up a birth center, and it's a freestanding birth center in St. Paul called the Twin Cities Birth Center. It was Health Foundations at the time. And they welcomed me with open arms, and it was great. And they cared for me in the ways that I wanted to be cared for as a woman. Like, asked me how my relationship is with my husband. What's my home life? How am I managing stress? How's my sleep?
The real questions.
Yeah. Even down to what's your connection with your spirituality? Because I think we go there a lot in birth, you know?
Oh my gosh, yeah, definitely. And I loved reading those parts in your book. I mean, what is birth if we don't include birth as a spiritual experience? I also don't know.
Yeah, and it gets stripped away from us, and it starts from the jump, really. And I think it's hard to reclaim something that you don't, maybe you're not fully educated on, or you don't have people helping you to do that. You really have to follow your own intuition if you haven't grown up in that. So it's a process. You have to do a lot of education for yourself.
Definitely. Yeah. I always say, you don't know what you don't know, especially the first pregnancy. So it is amazing all of the levels and layers women have to contend with nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that birth, your daughter's birth, ended favorably. How did that change you? Sounds like that was important.
Yeah, it was really important because I mean, there's so much wisdom, especially with those, like you're saying, the first birth. There's so much wisdom that you learn about yourself and your capacity and what your body can actually do. Mm. And just, you're just coming to this realization on, you're on like the precipice of your world shattering, and at the same time, like just the truth of your being. And it's such an incredible experience. It's so powerful. So I didn't like, I had a very long and painful birth with her, but I don't look at the pain like I hated it. I look at the pain like it was my companion, kind of. Like it, I mean, there were moments where I was like, this shit hurts. but it was like that pain was beside me the entire time, helping me to grow. And I'm so grateful for it. And it brought her to me and me to her. So it went well, you know, and my uterus was really tired at the end because it was a 40-hour labor. And so I had to, the birth center did some postpartum hemorrhage care, but it wasn't terrible. And I went home a couple hours later. So
that's beautiful. We cuddled thanks up. For sharing. Yeah. Thanks for sharing. I mean, it's always so great to hear birth stories and then, you know, first births, right? Like, I feel like they really do stand alone in their own category as far as initiation. So having a long experience, you know, can be typical in a sense. So it sounds like you were really supported and, you know, had a lot of your own insight and wisdom come through.
Yeah, it's such a gift to commit to something, and I realize not all births go the way we plan, and mine certainly didn't in my head go the way that I had planned it to go, but
right,
but it went the way it needed to.
Didn't plan on 40 hours.
Yeah I did not.
Yeah.
So and it was exhausting, but it was exhausting in a way that breaks you down to your raw self, and to meet that version of you is such an honor. And I think if we give women the opportunity to meet that version of themselves, it's life changing. It's society changing. It's world changing.
Yeah, I totally agree. Obviously. I mean, that's also my passion, you know, and one of the highest visions I think I also hold is that we are, you know, we get to transform each and every time. And we have this amazing ability to connect to source and ourselves and our own power. And yeah, that has been my experience in birth too. And in witnessing women, it's why it's so important. So obviously, was that kind of like the first stepping stone to this book?
Yeah, it was. So it kind of planted a seed in me that like, I wanted to be around all things birth and all things birth mommies. And so
you became obsessed.
Yeah, it bit me in the butt.
I recognize that. Yeah. So what happened next? I know you eventually come to Hawaii. I want you to just share a little bit. People can read your wonderful book, so just share what feels good now.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah, so I did a doula training here in Minnesota and learned about placenta encapsulation and postpartum care and you know, just getting hospital birth experience too, supporting mommies in hospitals. And then and I was already thinking about doing a PhD, and so I was like, okay, let's apply for these programs, and let's, because I needed my husband on board, because he's going to move with me. And we had already done our master's research in Hawaii, and I had spent quite a bit of time throughout the islands. And I was like, I think we should go there, and we should do some of this, and we should look at like cultural births and what that means too, for not only our place as women, but what about our place as Indigenous women? Or my husband's from Uganda, so what do Ugandan women do, or what does he do as a father in the birth space? So that was a really big element of the research I wanted to do. So I applied and got in, and it was amazing. And first semester,
you came to this very island of Oahu.
I did. Yeah. Came there, and Bella, my daughter, was about a year old at the time. And then my first couple weeks, I took a pregnancy test and found out I was pregnant with my son.
Oh my gosh, I love it. I love the synchronicities of that. And something you speak to a lot in the book is just the womb, right? As this obvious, like, creative center. And I think it's so great that you got pregnant the minute you got here or before.
I did. And it was funny because I had done some acupuncture just to deal with the stress of moving and motherhood and starting a PhD program. And I was like, you know, I need a tune up. So with my daughter, I did 3 acupuncture sessions, and I got pregnant with her. With my son, I did 3 acupuncture sessions and then found out I was pregnant with him. So
I love that. 3 is such a magical number too. That's really cool.
Yeah. And it's just, again, like, speaks to that process where you can have this other type of healing work, this, that isn't just based in Western medicine, that it can open up your body physically and can fine tune your health so that you can maybe change something like an ailment, or maybe it opens up space for you to get pregnant. And I know it's not like a one size fits all situation, but it seemed to work for me. So and so I got pregnant with Noah, and we had really good Kaiser insurance, and everything was going to be free and paid for if I went to the hospital. But I just,
because there are no birth centers here. I guess that's important to state. So yeah, you were looking at hospital birth as like one of your only options.
Yeah, it was either that or home birth. And I just couldn't bring myself to do the hospital birth. And so
had you considered home birth ever, like, before? I'm so curious about that.
I had always kind of thought, like, well, the birth center's kind of nice, and I had a decent experience with my daughter there. I mean, it was amazing, actually. And so I don't have anything to say too terribly wrong. It's just now that I've had a home birth, I also see how those birth centers can also carry a lot of medicalization into birth space, too. And so I had thought, you know, we would definitely have him outside of a hospital, but then I found out there were no birth centers there. And then I was like, well,
surprise.
And everyone was like, well, you could go to the Castle Birth Center. And I was like, but that's a hospital birth center.
Oh man. Don't you hate that? It's like, come on now. Yeah. Let's not confuse words here. That is not a birth center. It is simply a place at the hospital where births happen. Not the same thing.
Yeah. Not the same thing at all.
Not the same thing. And so
And so we're like, you know what? Let's talk to some of our friends. A lot of our friends have given birth at home. We talked to some of our friends about their experiences, and they mentioned a very mythical creature, woman named Medra. And we're like, Medra doesn't have a phone and you can't really contact her, but if she wants you to be at her birth, or if she's meant to be there, she will. And
Wow, I
so
didn't know that's how it worked with her. I mean, yeah.
maybe she has a phone or had a phone like towards, more towards the end of her days. But
Yeah.
because she has since passed and it was a great
Right.
loss for the community. But I was like, well, yeah, I was just really busy with my PJ. I was like, that just sounds too complicated. I'm just gonna look up some midwives. So the first person I looked up was Jamie. She came over, I called her up, she came over, and it was a done deal, basically, from the time she stepped in the door. I was like, yep, it's her. She's gonna be my midwife.
I love that.
So,
It's
yeah.
true, right? I've felt like that. I remember my first home birth too, which was also my second, also a son. Funny. We both have a daughter, then a son. But same. When I met my midwife, I was like head over heels. I was like just in love. Like, oh my gosh. And you know, it was so life-changing too for me. So I totally feel that. It's amazing what that relationship can do.
Yeah, it's such an honor to have that ex like that level of connection with somebody, and to have that support from another woman in such a beautiful way. Like, it's again like the society teaches women to compete and to like, I mean, teaches everybody to compete, but really
Sure.
to it really takes away that sisterhood. And to have somebody coming in and just loving you for you and making you feel beautiful and being just a gem of a human, like, it's amazing. Why would I not birth with her?
Right.
So
Right. Yeah.
she was
And
incredible.
yes, Jamie is incredible. So shout out to you, Jamie. We love you. Important to mention, I think, though, this was before, correct? Before like the legislation came in to Hawaii, which is pretty recent, right?
Yep,
It was before that.
exactly. I remember hearing rumblings of things about to happen, and we attended some community hearings when Noah was about 3 months old, where just midwives and home birth moms would get together and talk with lawmakers about the next steps and everything. And then while
And
I
what
was
exactly will you outline the political situation back then? Like there was no licensing, right? But maybe you can speak more to exactly how that was looking here since you were here.
Yeah, so I can't remember the exact year, but sometime I think it was in the, oh gosh, if somebody quotes me, I might be wrong, but maybe in the 70s or 80s. And the board, or the Department of Health and the Board of Nursing decided to assume certified nurse midwives under their board. And then anyone else who was functioning as a midwife, not in the hospital setting, wasn't under regulation.
Okay.
So it was kind of a gray zone of where you could be a home birth midwife, apprentice trained, or palikeiki, like a cultural practitioner, and you could attend births without, being afraid that you're going to be fined thousands of dollars or arrested.
Right. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And it's like, I just want to pause there because that is really important. And people listening to this podcast are probably really well versed in the politics, you know, from state to state or have had their own experiences. And I know that at this point, the past is the past, but just pausing to like acknowledge that that was happening not that long ago, right? Like that women were free to attend other women in the ways that felt right, whether it was as a traditional cultural midwife, right? Or whoever in whatever role. And now it's not. So we'll get to that. But that is really like a sad moment in history eventually that happens here.
Yeah, it is a really sad moment, and there's even more tension with this in Hawaii, I feel like, because there's such a long history of Hawaiian cultural birthing practices and so much trauma of the settler state, like denying Hawaiians the right to practice their culture in the, and their spirituality in the ways they see fit. And yet we have this overarching American government that's like, you have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and you don't have to endure racial or religious segregation here. And yet we see this all playing out on the local level, and people aren't even able to practice their spiritual beliefs, which can include birthing and oftentimes does.
Sure. Yeah. It's like a double insult, I feel like, compared to, you know, states on the mainland, right? Where midwifery is taking a hit, and any kind of traditional midwifery. And then here, like you're saying, this additional insult of having it be an entire culture that is being told how and when and where and why. And man, it riles me up, as I am sure it does for you.
Yeah, it's just bizarre to me. And, you know, like my husband, again, I mentioned this, but he's from Uganda. And so he's like, I don't understand why there's so much political issues. He's like, women are just women. They should be allowed to birth the way they want. And it's so simple. Right? It's such a simple thing. And I mean, we're not regulating it, whether you can take your kid out swimming and how many kids are drowning, unfortunately, right, in waters. Or we don't regulate if you can teach your cousin or your sister how to surf.
Yeah.
And there's probably more risk with that than there is with home birth.
Sure. Yeah. No, of course, I'm with you. And I'm sure we could talk all day about women's bodies being regulated and this initiation and this powerful rite of passage. Of course, it's no accident. I always feel like it's definitely not. Like, it's one of the most powerful times in our lives. And, you know, midwives also really are powerful in their own way and, you know, are an archetype. They're an archetype that I feel is on the decline. So anyway, we don't have to stay there. I know you feel the same way. Feel free to move on to, your birth and writing this book.
Yeah, I do feel the same way. And it is a really important part of what I pay attention to in my writings. But one of the things I really wanted to know, and I was really excited about, was learning about home birth moms and like how they live their lives. Because another thing that we're fighting against is this stigma that home birth moms are just completely anti everything having to do with American culture or completely against medicine altogether. And maybe they're like hippies who only shower every other week or something. You know, there's these weird ideas about these types of moms, and that's just crazy in and of itself. But what I found is, like, why not just ask these moms who they are and let them tell their stories and let them talk about who they are so that people can't judge them in the same way that they have been. So a lot of my research is just asking, like, what is your lifestyle like? What do you value every day? And there were so many similarities. And I think that maybe has to do with, like, living in Hawaii. But also, I think when you make the choice to have a home birth, it's just like a ripple effect in the rest of your life where you start to think about, how, if I have this strong experience, how can I really honor my family and have a family-centered life? How can I really honor a women's health-centered type of lifestyle? Connecting to the land. How can I honor the food? Because you really, when a newborn comes into this world in that way, there's such an honoring of life that just extends out to, like, everything else that we do. And it's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that. And I'm sure you experienced that. I know I did. Just everything, like you're saying, in life kind of shifts when you start opening your mind and your heart to this idea that really is still countercultural. Mm-hmm. So you talked to 59 moms, is that right?
That's yeah. right. 59 home birth mamas.
And were they all like of Hawaiian culture or the, or some just live here?
They were all just mixed. Some were Hawaiians, some were from the mainland who are now living in Hawaii. A lot of different backgrounds, a lot of different races. And then on the four main islands. So I wasn't able to connect with anyone in Molokai or Lanai, but all the other islands, basically, got to interview moms. And yet such a wide diversity of women and even ages and socioeconomic status and cultural backgrounds. And they were all marvelous and amazing. And I mean, we always want to share our birth stories, I feel like, as home birth moms. And so it was really, really an honor to hear their stories.
Yeah, I really enjoyed reading them, and it felt so intimate. And I'm sure it's because, you know, you are so connected and you were probably present in a way that these moms felt really comfortable. So, you know, so much of the sharing, again, seemed just really personal, and I really enjoyed reading them for sure.
Thank you. I think it helps when you've gone through something and then you are able to connect on that experience. Because I think if I was a member of ACOG interviewing these moms, maybe I would have gotten a completely different data set.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Oh, for sure. You know, I think, of course, like stories would be told differently. And then even the beautiful focus that you put, and I'm sure a lot of these mothers just naturally put on, like the spirituality of birth, or the connection to the land, like you have to feel somewhat safe, I feel like, to share some of that. And that's the beauty, you know, that's the beauty of birth. That's the beauty of each woman's experience. So yeah, again, those were really fun to read. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I think birth makes us a lot more tenderhearted and a lot more open to those really authentic connections with one another. And not saying that women who haven't birthed or have birthed in the hospital aren't capable of that, because there certainly are.
Sure.
But it is a unique experience. I mean, only 2% of women do this. So
right. And I mean, typically, right, like those of us that have births at home are so excited to share with the right people and talk about it. So I love that. Were you surprised by anything that came through in any of those interviews?
I wouldn't say I was surprised necessarily, but I would say the thing that was most impactful on me was probably the stories from Hawaiian women in particular about like their reasons for choosing this way of birth. Because it was like sad and happy at the same time, like happy in the sense of like reclaiming and connecting to the ancestral way of doing things.
Yeah.
And kind of intentionally a big F you to this system, but kind of like a big F you to the system. Like, I don't need you after all this time and I can do this on my own. But it was also very sad and heartbreaking to hear their stories of what has been lost through the years because of the occupation of American culture and, you know, the militarism and all of that. And again, I have friends in the military, so it's not saying that these people are bad. It's just functioning in establishments that cause at times like a lot of undue harm to local populations. So it was a bit heartbreaking sometimes.
Yeah, I bet. And being still very new here and really not immersed in the birth culture, at least not yet. I'm just curious to hear from you too. Like, I don't know, like what do you think like the percentage is of Native Hawaiian women choosing home birth? I mean, of course it's probably low, but I've just wondered about that since the indoctrination has been strong for all of us. Right. So what was your experience? What do you think?
I would probably have to agree with you just based off of intuition, but I don't have any hard statistical data on the comparison of Hawaiian moms versus maybe local or mainland moms. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of data about Pacific Islander health and, you know, health disparities. So it would be my best guess that Hawaiian moms are not choosing this because things of like the diet change has caused more diabetes and heart disease genetically in that population, and even the stress of colonization. So the health and the risk profile is higher in that population. So they may not want to choose a home birth, or they may have a difficult time with that. But the moms that I interviewed that did home birth, to me, it seemed like it's a growing trend of not just like doing home birth, but really reclaiming their cultural practices through the matriarchal lineage of like of giving birth and what that means for the culture, and growing your babies on the land and connected to the land and being home on their Aina Kupuna, like their ancestral land, like how much of a spiritual experience that is. And I think when you talk about that in families, it's just going to keep growing because people will see the importance of it and carry that through.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm of course not Native Hawaiian. I have not even been here that long, but I think I also read in your book that you feel similarly connected to this land as I feel I do. You know, I think you definitely get called here in a certain way, and there is something magical. And, you know, there's a lot of trauma, as you mentioned as well. There's a lot of history here in this land, but it also feels very communicative and alive. So I can't imagine, you know, being Native in a way and birthing here, and just like how amazing that probably is to be connected that way.
Yeah, I think it's got to be an incredible and powerful, and just like the amount of feelings in all of that experience has got to be the spectrum of what we can feel in our human design. But there is something about how special and unique Hawaii is, and how alive the land is, and how it's such a spiritual place. And I think if you're attuned to spirit or source or whatever, you can see it everywhere, you know.
I agree.
And not everyone in Hawaii does. Like, some people are just like, I just live in Hawaii. And then I'm like, look at the freaking mountains. They're amazing. Like, every day. I never didn't get used to it. Like, every day was, pinch me, please, because God made such a beautiful landscape and a beautiful spirit. And I agree. Maybe that's part of being a good guest in the land, is just always connecting and really feeling a reverence for the people and for the land of Hawaii.
Oh yeah. I feel the same. I pinch myself every day, and it's kind of like, if you didn't, you know, if you ever took it for granted, then I feel like maybe it would be time to go. Because this land is immaculate and deserves so much respect. So yeah. And birth is everywhere. You know, it's like being here. Yeah. You just feel it.
The big island energy too, with the birthing of the new island. And it's just so much a part of everything. And it's so, it has a maternal feel to it too. It always feels like a big hug every time I land in the Honolulu airport. I'm like, oh, I just feel like a big hug, like I'm back home in my mother's arms.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's funny. I just said that on another podcast a couple of weeks ago when I got back from Spain. Yeah, just that coming home, coming to the Honolulu airport is exactly what I said. You know, like how they speak Hawaiian over the loudspeaker. And, you know, it's just like, oh, I'm home. And it was raining and it was dark. And I was like, oh, man, you know, like my heart is so happy. So anyway, I'm curious to hear just your perspective on, you know, this shift that's happened politically. Like, I know that you wrote the book before this, before like the new law that was introduced, and you are free to speak to it from your perspective. But for people listening, my understanding is, you know, it's just another place kind of adding this idea that there's only one kind of midwife allowed, and that midwife is to go through a certain educational process and pay for licensing. And so licensing home birth midwives became mandatory here in, what year was it, 2022? What was it?
I think the full law enacted July 2023, so just very recently.
Right. So there was kind of like some leeway, I think, happening there. Things were being finalized. And so as it stands right now, again, correct me if I get any of this wrong, but if you're not licensed, obviously it is prohibited to practice midwifery, in quotes. And then also something that is not standard anywhere else that I have ever heard of anywhere, is the definition of midwifery that they have put into effect here, which essentially is anyone, right, that provides, I believe it's like childbirth advice, or it's like so broad, it's laughable. Like, I just want to laugh about it, really.
Yeah, it's like almost regulating our conversations we have with
that's
another.
What I mean, right? Yeah. Like, it's like just human rights at that point. Like, you're not allowed to give a suggestion, and especially as a Native Hawaiian, right? If there's a plant growing and you know that it's great for labor, God forbid you recommend those people, as well as those of us that are trained as midwives but don't want to submit to licensing, we're all falling under the same potential category. So I want to hear you talk about that, if you would, please.
Yeah, for sure. Well, just when you first brought it up, I had this idea in my mind of like monocropping. And how, you know, on Kauai, Syngenta will do their testing because it's such a great ground and climate for testing seeds year round. And eventually those seeds get approved and then they're taken over here. And then we just monocrop the crap out of all the land. And it feels a lot like that, where there's a monocropping going on in the field of birth or midwifery, where it's only one seed gets dominance. Only the certified midwives get dominance.
Yeah. I like that. I mean, I don't ones. Like, yeah, I don't like the idea, but I like your analogy. Okay.
Yeah, it just feels like that. And it feels like, even down to the diversity part of, like, I mean, Hawaiian culture obviously has to be honored, and it's sacred, and we should not be passing laws that interrupt that on the land that belongs to them. And then there's also a bunch of other cultures throughout the islands too. Right. So we're not only saying no to them, we're saying no to a diversity of birthing practices and a diversity of midwives or doulas. Yeah, right. Choice, which is so antithetical to the capitalist project in a way, because it's all about choice and all about consumer choice, except when it comes down to a spiritual embodied practice that returns the power back to the person and the family. Then it becomes a threat to the larger aims of the state power apparatus and the medical powers, the medical, socio-cultural powers that be. And so there's just a lot of downward pressure to kind of monocrop us. And and we're like, what are you doing? We can't be put in these boxes. Experiences and human experiences can't be put in these boxes. Culture can't. Midwifery can't. And so the way this is going to play out is going to be really interesting, because I don't see that there will never be a resistance against that. And I also see that there's always going to be a pushback, because anything having to do with health historically in our country has had to be funneled through a training program through universities and then through boards that are appointed by states or federal governments, and they oversee. Anything else is witchcraft, right? Like anything else is woo-woo. Anything else is not evidence-based according to their logic. And yet we have a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of experience and a wealth of hands from midwives that hold so much knowledge that they can never capture. No. And it's just this like constant tension. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. It's frustrating because there's also the thing about democracy, right? Like, so if it's my understanding, if a certain amount of people say, hey, we don't want this law, and that outnumbers the people that say, hey, we do want this law, then the representatives that are appointed should agree with the majority of the people. And in this case, they have done none of that for years. This has been going on for years, where every bill that has tried to get traditional, cultural, and lay midwives or unlicensed midwives into a state where they're not going to be criminalized or charged, like it constantly is just, no, we're not going to listen to the people.
Right.
It's
right. Bizarre. And historically, though, once legislation is put in place for midwives, there isn't a lot of backpedaling that ever happens, right? I mean, there's only three states that I can think of. Maybe there's four, three that come to mind, Minnesota being one, right? Where acting as an unlicensed midwife is allowed. But that is very rare once the law is put into place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's not, everybody just moves on, you know, they move on. And I think the powers that be, and sometimes it's other women, you know, sometimes it's midwives that push for this kind of stuff. They're done. Like their mission has been accomplished and it is what it is. So I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. I wish the best, of course, being here for a million reasons, not just my own, that traditional midwifery, traditional practices will be like allowed back in. But there's something about all of it that already feels really locked down, and I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong, but that's how it feels to me.
It does feel that way. And it's kind of so perplexing to me because we're kind of in this social era right now where we are like, we need to honor Indigenous voices. We need to honor the BIPOC experience. And this is like, you know, the government has even said this and pushed this through the ranks and into the grassroots.
Right. And yet, but they have other reasons for that.
Absolutely. Right? Right. Yeah. And then we could go into that whole like reverse psychology and racial division and kind of thing that's
even
going on.
Yeah. Even like, let's promote, you know, I mean, let's promote people that want to be women. Like we care more about that as a culture somehow than like actual women that are like here and many places all over mm-hmm. the country, birthing and wanting to make the right choices for them. So obviously it's not really about that. It's about, yeah, restraining women's power. And again, mm-hmm. you know, limiting choices, limiting midwifery. But yeah, I guess we'll all see, right? What the end story is here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like people will die for the power apparatus before they'll ever say, hey, wait a second, maybe we're wrong here. Like they'll go so hard to deny midwifery without even knowing anything about it. Just because the power apparatus says this is an unsafe thing, or mm-hmm. From a public health perspective, we want to save mothers. And a lot of it is just so much projection too. Like, look at the hospitals. You're not doing a great job at birth right now.
Right. You know, it's just rhetoric. You know, it's just what the mass message is. But I don't know. You don't live here right now. So maybe you don't have any insight into this, but do you feel or like, do you know if there's kind of any pushback, whether, you know, it's from Native Hawaiians that are upset about this, or, you know, there's plenty of people I'm sure like me that are here. Like, is anyone going to just ignore it, was my question. And I tried to ask somebody here that, and it didn't, really get communicated well, because that's how I think. I'm like, well, I'm just going to do it anyway. I mean, I've been doing it anyway for the last 12 years. Like, I don't need a government anywhere to tell me how I can serve the woman in front of me. It's none of their business. But like, what's the attitude about that here?
I think most of the people who are against the midwifery regulation, from the home birth moms to the midwives, to even the keiki who want to birth at home someday themselves, I think they're going to end up doing whatever they want, because it's the voice of their calling, of their responsibility to their culture and their authenticity and their spirituality is so much more powerful than the voice of the government telling you what you can and cannot do. So what voice do I think they're going to listen to? I think they're going to listen to their own voices, because that's great. Kind of how we are.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear. And I mean, that feels really good. And of course, you know, that feels so powerful. And I think no matter what culture we are, that's our gift as women too, right? To like be connected in the ways that feel right, and to make these calls as the matriarchs of our family to influence the future, not even our direct experience, right? So not even just like for the here and now. So it's so crucially important, like you're saying, for the future. But yeah, like I said, I'm just not involved enough to really have an inside scoop on like, are people actually listening to this? Like, is this being taken seriously? So it's good to hear that you think they're going to just do it anyway. That's the spirit.
I think so. I think there's a big fight against it still. Even if they're going to do whatever they want to do, it still is like, because historically, you give the state an inch and they take a mile.
Of course.
You give them this win, and the next win is going to be even a bigger blow.
Oh, right. So I mean, did we not all learn that like through COVID, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
And that's what felt extra surprising about this to me personally, in that timeline of post-COVID, that this would even have gotten through in the way it did for exactly that reason. Like, are they going to start showing up on people's doorsteps soon and telling them what they can and cannot do with their children? Like, that's what we have at risk, I think.
Right.
It's huge.
It is huge. And the, again, like just going back to that relationship between the state and the medical authority. And I'm not just even talking about hospitals. It's this, it's like this embedded ideas of how we should live and how we should how we should oversee death, even how we should oversee birth, how we should oversee our daily functions. And it's like,
it's a huge thought form.
Oh yeah. And when did they appoint themselves God? Right. You know, like,
right. And when perplexing. did we all like allow certain elements of it to happen? Right.
It's inch by inch, they take, because it's really a siphoning of our power. And when we birth at home, it's like, we just took all that power back, and it's the next best thing to ever happen to us. And it's like, wow, I can actually embody this power, and I don't have to give it away. And I can be responsible for this power, and I'm powerful enough to hold this in the container of my body. I mean, that just blows apart the foundation of what the powers that be should be in our lives. And they become less and less significant for us when we live out our lives in that way. But there's also, like you're saying, that fear, like with COVID, they do have a lot of hard power. It's not soft power. It's like hard power through COVID. I mean, they weren't even letting people go into like the libraries without a vax pass. It was crazy.
That's insane. And the
social division was nuts. And calling people grandma murderers for not doing certain things that they didn't feel were authentic to themselves. So they have their minions, and sometimes you just have to lay low until things simmer, I've found.
Yeah, I mean, you have the wisdom around that here for sure. I was obviously not here during that time, and I am glad. It sounded really, really awful. So I see the relationship too, so strongly, just kind of like maybe the different belief systems. And again, you know, this like cultural oppression, and there's so many like different elements to it happening here. So maybe mm-hmm. it does make sense in this weird way. One last thing I thought would be fun to talk about with you is just the beautiful idea and word sovereignty. That's something that means a lot to me as well. And I enjoyed reading some of your perspective and as you spoke to these women. So want to go there for a few?
Sure, let's do it. Yeah. The word sovereignty. Well, I think we've all been like thought to think of sovereigns as kings and queens growing up, right? So that's the mainstream idea that pops into the head. Or sovereignty, like it's a sovereign nation. Not a lot of people are educated in mainstream culture to think about sovereign as you as a person being a sovereign being. And you get to think for yourself, and you get to take responsibility for things, and you get to have choices over your body even. And we're put into school systems, many of us, where our sovereignty gets taken away. We have to get a hall pass to even go to the bathroom.
Oh, right.
So we can't even pee when we need to. So, you know, it chips away little by little until we end up losing that. And I think sovereignty to me means reclaiming what is authentic to yourself and your community and maybe your family even, in a way that you make choices that feel and resonate with you on like a vibrational level that feels good. You feel the goodness and the truth behind it. And there's no question or doubt behind what you're doing, kind of thing. Mm. So, and when it comes to birth, it's like back to the glucose test. She wasn't honoring my sovereignty. And in your case, wasn't honoring your sovereignty about what you're even putting into your body and alchemizing through your bloodstream. Mm. And when we take that power back, and we say no, and we say, I'm going to determine that for myself, or I'm going to determine that with my partner for our children. I mean, we're returning to who we need to be. It's like a remembrance of who we are again. And I think it's such a beautiful process. Then on the cultural level with Hawaiians, it's like, it's all that plus the land, plus the connection with the water, plus how you're speaking to the land and in relationship with it, how you're in relationship with the water. Are you going to take more than you need? What does that do? And really looking at things from a long-term perspective too. Like I had a woman once on Kauai tell me her son went out fishing and caught a ton of fish. And was going to store it in the freezer and had a second thought about it. It was like, you know what? I'm just going to take what I need today. Because if I take more today, then maybe tomorrow, maybe the next day, maybe the day after that, I'm not going to have anything left. And so he was honoring the sovereignty of the water and the fish in that way. You know, we're in a, like, it's such a symbiotic relationship, especially in Hawaii with these elements of land and water. And that just always stuck with me because I was like, it's not just about our own sovereignty. It's also about honoring other people's sovereignty, even down to things. And I'm not like a vegan, so I'm not, and I know this might sound like vegan, like really honoring life and animals and everything, but really having that symbiotic relationship with like how you're consuming animals, if you are an animal consumer, how you're connecting with the land or the garden in your backyard. We become more human when we do that. And it's such a beautiful thing.
That is so beautiful. Yeah, I really feel that as well. And right, I don't think it necessarily has to do with if you'd eat it or not. It's more just in relationship to, is what I hear you saying, in relationship to the elements and the animals. And you know, I think practically speaking, something I've learned here is there is that like highly spiritual element, but also there's kind of like the practicality in a sense of living on an island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, you know, as far as resources go, or meeting Native people and feeling their kind of like different energy, and the whole Aloha spirit like is a real thing. And I had one Native man befriend me on the beach a couple months ago, and it was so like beautiful and enlightening. I felt like I was like it was my church, you know, like I was out there and this guy just wanted to share with me some Hawaiian wisdom. So things like that came up, and he's like, you know, we're a warrior culture, like we take care of each other, and like God help you if you do something we don't like, maybe. But on the flip side, like we've got your back. And if you're here with good intentions, and if you're here and you honor the land, like, you know, we've got you. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was that's very much something that has stuck with me in the time being here. So I feel you. That. And yeah, I love that story that you shared.
Thank you. I have another story if you want to hear it.
I would love
very
to hear
quick.
It. Yeah.
It's kind of reminded me of what you just said. So one day we were swimming in Waimanalo Beach, and we should have known better because the moon does something funky to the jellyfish out there. That they're called like Portuguese man-of-wars.
Yes,
and they're like
the big
jellyfish
blue ones.
On steroids. Yes, they're on steroids.
They're like those big, like you could pop them things.
Yes.
Yeah. They are. Mm-hmm.
They're gnarly. So... luckily, okay, one of them swam by my daughter, and my husband picked up my daughter right away, and it ended up wrapping around his leg, so it didn't sting her, luckily, but it stung him, and he was having a hard time with the sting, and it was like the pain was moving up his leg and even up into his chest. And a Hawaiian man walked by and was like, you know, the solution is usually next to the problem. And he went and gathered some leaves and crunched them up and put it on my husband's sting. And it relieved everything. And he didn't feel pain anymore. So, I mean, there's so many lessons, again, from the culture and the people and the land. And about that sovereignty, even. Like, look, he cured his sting and didn't have to go over to Castle.
Yeah.
And how amazing that is to have that relationship with one another and the land.
Mm. Do you have any last stories that you really remembered about any Hawaiian birthing practices that were shared with you?
I think
not to put you on the spot.
No, that's such a good question. I think one of the coolest things that I learned through interviews and through kind of reading about Hawaiian birth practices, and now I'm like kind of OCD about it for some reason, but it's about like if a pregnant woman like ties up something, like nothing should be tangled up, because they would say like then her cord would get tangled.
Yeah.
And it's maybe a little superstition, but now I'm like have this thing where I'm like nothing can be tangled up too much in my house. Because I think energetically, too, it's like then things mm-hmm. can maybe get tangled up. Another one was like if you have this feeling that you really need to see like one of your friends very often while you're pregnant, and you just are like, I just have to be around them, that when you give birth, that baby will be like having a special connection with that person.
Mm.
And so I think over time, these things have just been noticed and recorded through the family, like through the Olilo Hawaii and through the family lineage. And probably if we were to do a scientific study on them, they would be true. So
definitely. Cool. I mean, all of those, like, you know, old wives tales or whatever we call them in whatever culture, I feel like there's at least grains of truth to them, right? There's a reason. And the way they're handed down, those teachings are, yeah, important to listen to and important to honor. And I love hearing those stories. I feel like I could just read, you know, books of them if that existed. And I'd love to learn more here about those Hawaiian practices too.
Yeah, for sure. There's so many wonderful, I'll put you in touch hopefully with this woman. Pua, and she did her master's research on some of those old traditions while you're pregnant, and she just has a master's thesis written on it.
Oh, wow.
And she went through archives and like pulled a ton of data and knowledge on all this, and so cool.
Yeah, that would be so cool, right? And that's not to mention like all the herbal knowledge and, you know, I'm sure all kinds of cool stuff that, is here in the land and in the people. So thank you so much. Thanks for sharing your beautiful heart and some of this amazing book.
Thank you so really much. Nice. Thanks for having me, Maren. I'm so grateful for you and the work you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I know Hawaii is more blessed that you're there. So
that's very sweet. I appreciate that. As we were talking, we'll have to meet maybe sometime soon in the future. So I'll look forward to that. And in the meantime, why don't you let people know, I'll link to your book, but anything else you want them to know, if you have a website or anything else?
Yeah, sure. My website is my full name, alexandrakisitu.com. You can order my book there and learn a little bit more about me, or just follow me on Instagram at alexandrakisitu. It's all the same across the board. And then I do intuitive work too. So if you're interested in intuitive work, come check me out on Instagram too. So
that is awesome. I did not know that. That's really cool. You're a multi-talented woman. I'm not surprised.
All of us mothers have to be.
Right. That is true. Yeah. That is true. Lots of creativity. Well, thanks again for being here. I will link to Alexandra's book, and I hope you all check it out. Have a great week, everybody.